This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Israeli Massacre at Sea, Prelude to Larger War. Before we begin our show today, let's go to Ralph Pointer for an update on the case of Lynn Stewart. Ralph, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. And when people ask me, how is Lynn, my answer is, she's in jail. And she's making the best at it, the best of the situation. I have a little statement on courage that I would like to read, but I've been thinking and working on. It ties in with what's happening today in the theme of the program. Genocide is not instantaneous. It is plotted and planned. History reveals that the plots and plans of genocide and people look back in shame. As genocide and torture happens, the attitudes of people in societies is that of denial. America is a nation of genocide and torture, and it is in denial of such. Those who have the courage to speak truth are always in danger. Lynn Stewart has the courage to speak truth at a time and place and where denial is king, and she is in danger of suffering a long, slow death in the U.S. penal system. All that stands between her and this slow death is courage in the judicial system. All that stands between her and torture in a penal medical system is courage on the part of medical professionals. At a time where courage is dwindling, we all must support courage and courageous people where and whenever they rise up. America needs courageous people as much now as in any time in its history. Build on courage that has been displayed in this nation by a few by adding yourself to that list of courageous people until we constitute the overwhelming many. So I say to all people of courage in, around Lynn Stewart, around Gaza, around the world, we must stand with the courageous people, not let them down. Thank you so much, Ralph and Maya.
Thank you,
and Ralph, let's have Lynn's address so people can continue to write to her.
Lynn Stewart, LynnStewart. Her number is 53504, Manhattan Correctional Center, MCC, 2S, standing for 2 South, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 1007-10007-054. She loves getting letters, and she will answer you, put in a return address. Thanks again, Ralph and Maya.
Thank you,
and Ralph will be with you next week. We hope you'll bring a statement from Lynn.
I will do so. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ralph.
And now to our program, Israeli Massacre at Sea, Prelude to a Larger War. June 4th, Dr. Haluk İnce, the director of Istanbul's Medical Examination Institute, revealed an autopsy report. 9 Turkish men on board the Mavi Marmara were shot a total of 30 times. 5 were killed by gunshot wounds to the head. This was reported by Dr. Haluk İnce, as well as the vice chairman of the Turkish Council of Forensic Medicine, which carried out the autopsies for the Turkish Ministry of Justice. The bullets were 9mm bullets, many of them fired at close range. 5 men had bullet wounds to the back of the head or in their back. 2 others were shot 4 times. 1 victim, the gun had been fired at extremely close range to the person's head, between 2 and 14 centimeters. Ibrahim Bilgin, 61, an electrical engineer from Şirit, who was a member of the Chamber of Electrical Engineers of Turkey. He was a candidate in the Turkish general election of 2007, and he was in the mayoral election of 2009 in his hometown of Şirit. He was married with 6 children. Ibrahim Biljan, 61, was shot 4 times in the temple, the chest, the hip, and the back, all at close range by the Israeli Navy SEALs, the Flotilla 13 group. Ali Haider Benji, 39, ran a telephone repair shop. He was a graduate of Al-Azhar University. He had studied in the Department of Arabic Literature. He was married and had 4 children, the eldest 15 and the youngest twins, Mohammed and Senar, 5 years old. Another of the dead, Sevet Kiliklar, 38, from Kayseri. He also was a graduate of the university, Marmara University's Faculty of Communication. He had been a newspaper journalist for the Turkish National Gazette and the Anatolia Times. And for the past year, he was a reporter and webmaster for the humanitarian relief agency, the IHH, which had sponsored the Mavi Mara. The Humanitarian Relief Foundation is the English translation of IHH. He was married with 1 daughter and 1 son. Seten Topukoglu, 54, from Adana. He was a former amateur soccer player and taekwondo champion who coached Turkey's national taekwondo team. He also was married with 1 son. Another of the dead, Nidet Yildirim, 32. He was an IHH aid worker from Malatya. He was married, had 1 daughter, Melek, aged 3. Then the 6th person assassinated, Fari Yaldiz, 43. A fireman, he worked for the municipality of Adiyam. He, too, was married and leaves 4 sons. The 7th person assassinated, Sengiz Songor, 47, from Izmir. Married, with 6 daughters and 1 son. The 8th person assassinated, Sengiz Aküz, 41 years old, from Iskenderun. Married with 3 children, ages 14, 12, and 9 years old. The 9th person assassinated, an American citizen, born in Troy, New York, who lived in Turkey. Furkan Dogan, only 19 years old. He was in his senior year of high school at Kayseri High School and was awaiting the results of his university exams. His aspiration was to be a doctor. He's the son of a doctor, Ahmet Dogan, who was also an associate professor at one of the Turkish universities. These are the 9 people assassinated by the Israeli SEALs, 5 of whom had gunshot wounds to their heads. Ralph?
The CNN report has the headline, Autopsies Reveal 9 Men on Gaza Aid Boat Shot, 5 at Close Blank Range in the Head. Robert Booth reported on June 5th in The Guardian, 9 Turkish men on board Mavi Marmara were shot a total of 30 times, autopsy reports reveal. 5 were killed by gunshot wounds directly to the head, according to the vice chairman of the Turkish Council of Forensic Medicine, which carried out the autopsies for the Turkish Ministry of Justice today. Autopsy results on the bodies of those killed obtained by The Guardian revealed they were peppered with 9mm bullets fired at close range, quote-unquote. These were executions, and they were carried out according to plan. But whose plan? Haaretz reported on June 1st, quote, senior ministers of the Netanyahu cabinet have been sharply critical of the fact that the decision to seize control of the flotilla to Gaza was made after 2 meetings of the Forum of 7 Ministers, but without official deliberation of the inner cabinet, the body that has the authority to approve military actions on this scale, unquote, Haaretz. Well, then who ordered the raids, brothers and sisters? What were the roles of Israeli intelligence and of the IDF? Rahm Emanuel, Obama's White House chief of staff, had meetings with Netanyahu and Shimon Peres on May 26th and May 27th and was in direct contact with high officials of Israeli military and intelligence. I don't think they were discussing recipes for blintzes. It is unlikely that these meetings would take place without reference to these specific plans of attack. Obama's White House gave a green light. On June 2nd, the following report appeared. Quote, Vice President Joe Biden today praised Israel for raiding the ships, stating they had a right to know what was on board, unquote. AIPAC immediately issued a statement, cheered by Biden's comments, and stated these are strong statements of support for Israel. Gary Ackerman, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman, quote, praised the raid, stating that he and the House support Israel's decision to attack the ship and the decision of the commandos to use deadly force against aid workers who, he said, were brutally attacking them. He added that the whole matter was secretly Hamas's fault, unquote. Israel's actions and the U.S. support of these actions and the sequence of events which unfolds is in line with the following developments in the previous week. 1. Last week, Israel staged a large air attack on Gaza while conducting the largest ever annual war drill. The Army Security and Rescue Services ended a 5-day military exercise with mass mobilization of Israeli citizens who were required to dash to bunkers and safe rooms across the country in response to simulated attacks, unquote. On Sunday, Israeli warplanes carried out mock air raids over southern Lebanese villages, over Nabatea, Hiyam, and Marjayun. Israeli MK surveillance drones violated Lebanese airspace over towns in the area of Nabatea and throughout southern Lebanon. Last week, the Beirut Daily Star reported that Lebanese anti-aircraft guns fired on two Israeli warplanes, making what appeared to be bombing runs, and obviously seeking to elicit anti-aircraft fire. On Saturday, Foreign Minister of Israel Danny Ayalon threatened directly Lebanon's Prime Minister Saad Hariri, declaring, quote, he personally will pay a high price in the advent of a new war, unquote, a direct threat of assassination. 2 weeks before, the Obama White House announced $205 million in emergency military aid for Israel in support of Israel's Iron Dome rocket shield system against short-range rockets. Israeli officials announced that they would be placing these against Lebanon. This week, the London Sunday Times published an exclusive report on Israel's decision to deploy 3 German-built submarines equipped with nuclear-armed cruise missiles in the Gulf along the Iranian coastline. This deployment took place the day after Tel Aviv rejected a United Nations call to detail its secretive nuclear program. The Sunday Times reported that the first submarine has already been sent. All 3 submarines of Flotilla 7, the Dolphin, the Tecuma, and the Leviathan, have been dispatched before to the Persian Gulf, but they are now being stationed permanently on a rotating basis. Quote, this is the Sunday Times, the vessels can remain at sea for 50 days and stay submerged up to 1,150 feet. The cruise missiles are equipped with the most advanced nuclear warheads in the Israeli arsenal, brothers and sisters. That is the context of the executions unfolding on the sea off of the coast of Gaza in international waters.
Ralph, the headline of the Washington Post on Tuesday, June 1st, made it very clear. The headline was, Israel says Free Gaza Movement poses threat to Jewish state, an article by Scott Wilson. Meanwhile, Max Blumenfeld discovered the following article in Mariv, Israel's most widely circulated newspaper. 3 days before the raid, the article stated, top military officials revealed details of their strategy to Mariv. The caption of the Mariv article reflected the military command's plan to use force against the Gaza flotilla. Quote, On the way to violence, one of the boats is on its way. End quote. The subhead of the article, the sea encounter that will occur at the end of the weekend, is already planned detail by detail. From the moment that ships will pass the, quote, red line on their way to Gaza, the fighters of Unit 13, that is the Navy SEALs, will take control and transfer 800 passengers from their boats back to where they came from. Special arrest units were set up. From the body of the article appears the following. This operation was approved by Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Barak, and will be led by the commander of the Navy, Lieutenant Colonel Eliezer Maron, who is nicknamed Cheney. If the people aboard the boats will not agree to turn around, the operation will transfer to the stage of force. I repeat, appearing in Maariv, the following sentence. If the people aboard the boats will not agree to turn around, the operation will transfer to the stage of force. Quote, we are afraid that there will be a terror attack by the boats, said a high-ranking officer. If terrorists have gotten on the boats, or if there is an intention to use hot weapons against our forces, we will use full seriousness and caution. But as soon as there will be a danger to the life of our forces, we will be forced to use live fire. And this is from the Maariv article. They are setting the stage, as has been revealed by the eyewitnesses, the reporters and the doctors and the people on board the Mavi Mara. The Navy SEALs started live fire against the people on the boat as they were descending from the helicopter. Ralph.
Well, Maya, the Israeli military broadcast these plans for assassination and execution and proceeded to incite the Israeli public and the soldiers of Unit 13 with fevered predictions of a kill or be killed encounter with, quote, a group of terrorists. The stated conditions for using live fire were arbitrary. Israeli newscasters routinely used the term Mechabel, or terrorists, referring to the flotilla activists. Zero commanders were hung and nine activists were killed, including an American citizen shot in the head four times. Hanin Zoabi, a Palestinian-Israeli member of the Knesset who was on the Mavi Marmara, was physically accosted in the Knesset by fellow legislators for attempting to relate her experience aboard the flotilla and to describe what actually occurred. Member of Knesset Miri Regev of Likud called her a traitor, and Yoel Kasson of Kadima denounced her as a terrorist, and an Israeli Facebook group devoted itself to inciting Zoabi's assassination, with 600 members in a day and a half pledged to the undertaking. In the meantime, Israel's Interior Minister Eli Yeshai has put forward a proposal to strip Zoabi of her citizenship. The process is very clear. A propaganda apparatus of the IDF proceeded immediately to set in motion the targeting of the people on the flotilla, including a member of the Knesset, with a prearranged execution plan announced and described in Tel Aviv, with meetings between Rahm Emanuel and the intelligence and military directors implementing this plan. This is the context, brothers and sisters. This was the deliberate provocation, the staged attack to take as many lives as possible, to terrorize the flotilla and the movement to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza, and to put it into a context of a larger mobilization for a rapidly expanding new war.
Ralph, Espen Gofeng, a 38-year-old activist from Norway, was on the Mavi Marmara. He described what took place. The Navy SEALs, the Israeli Navy SEALs, began their assault from the helicopter itself. They started off with some kind of paintball bullets, but these bullets had glass shards in them that left terrible soft tissue wounds. Then to rubber bullets and then live ammunition afterwards. The so-called paintball bullets had glass shards in them, rubber bullets fired at close range are deadly, and they use the live ammunition. Defense Minister Ehud Barak, this is the Israeli defense minister, has described the human rights activists as terrorists. He said this was the armada of hate and violence in support of the Hamas terror organization. The relief armada, the flotilla, bringing humanitarian aid to besieged Gaza, the 1.5 million people who are starving and whose homes have been destroyed, whose education system destroyed, who are denied clean water. This is the armada of hate and violence. He said, the organizers are well known for their ties to global jihad, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas. Their intent was violent, their method was violent, and the results were unfortunately violent. There have been from the Israeli forces disinformation in terms of the information released, fake audio, fake video, and claims that the people on board, the humanitarian activists, including those assassinated, were terrorists. Let's look at the details of the fake audio and the fake video. And then we also have the false claims of Al-Qaeda and jihadist mercenaries. The audio tape to begin with. On June 6th, the Israeli Defense Forces admitted in a press release that it had doctored audio from its exchanges with the Gaza flotilla in order to paint the flotilla passengers as anti-Semites. The comments were, quote, the transmission had originally cited the Mavi Marmara ship as being the source of these remarks. However, due to an open channel, the specific ship or ships in the Freedom Flotilla responding to the Israeli Navy could not be identified. In fact, if you listen to this audio tape, which is available on YouTube and other internet sites, you hear that it is clearly a compilation that the IDF is making up. Huwaida Araf, one of the founders of the Free Gaza Movement, who you hear on the radio, states that it is an open channel, is always an open channel, and everyone knows who is on the radio. The fake audio has her talking about access to Gaza. In fact, the ships never got close enough to Gaza to have that access. The Zionists were trying to put forward comments about Auschwitz that the Navy overheard. Shut up, go back to Auschwitz. And another saying, don't forget 9/11, as if this is a threat. But a few days later, the IDF admitted this was a fake audio tape. Then we have the video, so-called spoof video that was mocking the activists, that simulates the We Are the World popular song. The people, led by key figures in the Israeli government, particularly Carolyn Glick, who is the deputy managing editor of the Jerusalem Post and served as the assistant foreign policy advisor to Benjamin Netanyahu from 1997 to 1998. She is the author of this spoof video, We Con the World. It was disseminated by the press office, the official Israeli press office, which is tied to the prime minister's office. It was sent to journalists, it was put on YouTube, and it was seen by hundreds of thousands of people around the world. It is still up there, and it doesn't have a disclaimer. Finally, the prime minister's office said that it was only a spoof, although high officials in the Zionist government say that they agree with this videotape. Ralph.
Maya, the propaganda campaign that was undertaken by the IDF, the so-called Israeli Defense Forces, when placed under journalistic scrutiny, was found to be entirely based upon fabrication. The IDF was forced to admit that its proclamation about the flotilla's links to international terror had no basis in fact. On June 2nd, the IDF had put out a press release with the shocking headline, "Attackers of the IDF soldiers found to be Al-Qaeda mercenaries." They made the claim that the passengers were equipped with bulletproof vests, night vision goggles, and weapons. And the press release, which was put out by the IDF, was the basis for mobilizing rallies in support of the IDF across Israel. Quote, and this is from the IDF publication, "In a special meeting of the Security Council, it has been disclosed that a group of 40 people on board the Mavi Marmara with no identification papers are actually members of Al-Qaeda. The terrorists were equipped with bulletproof vests, night vision goggles, and weapons. On board the Mavi Marmara ship that arrived as part of the flotilla to Gaza was a group of 40 people with no identification papers who are mercenaries and members of the Al-Qaeda terror organization. This was confirmed by the Israeli Security Cabinet, which gathered on Tuesday evening, June 1st, for a special meeting. Official intelligence," the IDF statement continues, "disclosed that the terrorists wore bulletproof vests, carried night vision goggles, weapons, and large sums of cash. Each person in the group had the exact same amount of cash in his pockets. The Shai Yayet Navy Special Forces interception of the ship disclosed that these were terrorist plans ready to attack soldiers." Now, the IDF distributed this press release on June 2nd, and on the following day, when confronted by other journalists, they were obliged to withdraw the lurid accusations.
Ralph, an army spokesperson said, quote, "We don't have any evidence. The press release was based on information from the Israeli National Security Council." The National Security Council is Netanyahu's so-called kitchen cabinet of advisors, just as the President of the United States has a kitchen cabinet.
Well, let me emphasize, Maya, that it is with these very individuals that Rahm Emanuel was meeting. When he met with Barak and Netanyahu, he met with this so-called kitchen cabinet that organized this massacre at sea. They not merely organized it, they orchestrated it in Maarif before the event. They prepared their lying propaganda at the same time. They disclosed it and released it and mobilized around it.
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Israeli Massacre at Sea, Prelude to Larger War. Ralph, I want to continue with more information about the disinformation campaign by the Zionist government, and particularly by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. We had been talking about the fake press release. Well, not a fake press release. It's a real press release from the Israeli Security Council. But what's fake is the information, and they had to retract it. But the damage is done before they retract it. And this is the statement that the IDF soldiers found that 40 people aboard the Mavi Marmara had links to Al-Qaeda, that they were Al-Qaeda mercenaries. Even after that retraction, the IDF continued with its disinformation. And Haaretz reported on June 6th, five Gaza flotilla activists linked to Hamas and Al-Qaeda. So first they started with the 40 mercenaries. They've retracted that, but they still came out and said that five activists were linked to Hamas and Al-Qaeda. Another false statement, but they still persist. And this is the article by Anshul Pfeiffer that appeared in Haaretz. The Israeli Defense Forces revealed on Sunday that five of the pro-Palestinian activists aboard the Turkish flagged ship it intercepted last week en route to the Gaza Strip have links to Hamas and Islamic Jihad movements. The military did not specify whether the five activists took part in violent clashes with the Israeli Navy commandos. However, these are the activists they name. One of the activists exposed by the IDF was named as Iranian-born Fatima Mahmadi, a 31-year-old resident of the United States. According to the IDF, Mahmadi is a member of Viva Palestine, a movement that had tried bringing illegal electronic devices into the Gaza Strip. And it's unspecified what these electronic devices might be. Perhaps they are radios or computers. Ken O'Keefe, a 41-year-old citizen of the United States and Britain, actually Ireland, was another activist named by the IDF as having links to terrorist organizations. According to the IDF, O'Keefe is an extremist who hates Israel and whose, quote, goal was to reach Gaza in order to help train and establish Hamas commando units, end quote. The other activists singled out by the IDF were Hassan Inyasi, a 28-year-old Turkish citizen who belongs to an Islamic charity and regularly contributed financial assistance to Islamic Jihad, Hussein Yarosh, a supporter of the Turkish IHH, who was allegedly planning to help bring al-Qaeda militants from Turkey to Gaza, and Ahmed Umimam, a 51-year-old Moroccan-born resident of France and allegedly a member of Hamas. Well, information about Ken O'Keefe is on the internet, and I went and I looked at his websites, so I think it is very interesting to at least examine one of these flotilla activists who are so-called linked to Hamas and al-Qaeda. Ralph.
I think it's worthwhile, brothers and sisters, and I'm very glad that you focused on this, Maya, because it's extremely illuminating. This is the statement of Ken O'Keefe, the so-called terrorist, the so-called organizer of terrorist commandos amongst Hamas. I was born in July 1969, and I worked as a marine conservationist and human rights activist. Born in California, I renounced my American citizenship on March 1, 2001 in Vancouver, Canada. I proudly hold Irish, Hawaiian, and Palestinian citizenship, although my ultimate allegiance is to all people, and I am in truth a world citizen. Before I was conscious, I served in the United States Marine Corps. During the 1991 Gulf War, I was ordered, along with several hundred thousand other service members, to take experimental injections in pills that have been identified since as a factor in the Gulf War syndrome. Many have died from this condition. I believe that we were exposed to depleted uranium while in Kuwait and on the border of Iraq. As a Marine, I spoke out openly about abuse of power by my superiors, and I paid a heavy price. I realized that honor and integrity were virtues that are punished rather than rewarded, and the Marines supplied me with my first serious taste of injustice. This experience taught me one central lesson, just how precious freedom is. Upon my discharge from the Marines, I vowed never again to relinquish my freedom and to defend freedom without fear. Upon my discharge from the Marines, I commenced an ongoing course in the areas of anthropology, history, politics, and ecology, and various forms of law with emphasis on human rights law. I have been profoundly impacted by Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn, along with many others, books that forced me to confront my own indoctrination and ignorance about the hidden America, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, Black Like Me, Animal Liberation, The Universal Kinship Diet for a New America, A People's History of the United States, and The End of Nature. There are many more books, but I list these for the benefit they may offer to anyone seeking the truth. My love of the sea moved me to found a scuba diving company, more of a marine conservation organization, the company's Deep Ecology in Hawaii. We are responsible for the saving of dozens of endangered green sea turtles and the formation of a legitimate marine sanctuary in the north shore of Oahu. While in Hawaii, I became a Hawaiian national and served as a legislator with the lawful Hawaiian government, and I have authored two laws, one that bound the Hawaiian government to nonviolence, and the other outlawing weapons of mass destruction in Hawaii. In 2004, I was guest of a peace organization in Japan who sponsored me for a speaking tour on human rights and peace. The invitation was timed to coincide with the Hiroshima and Nagasaki anniversaries. And while in Japan, I met with dozens of survivors, and I was deeply moved by what they shared. To say nuclear war creates hell on earth is no exaggeration whatsoever. And I say, as long as the point is necessary, Hiroshima and Nagasaki are the two greatest acts of terrorism the world has ever experienced. He continues, brothers and sisters, I founded the Truth, Justice, Peace, Human Shield Action to Iraq. Both these direct actions acknowledge huge disparity between the value of Western life versus everybody else, the greatest example being well over 1 million Iraqis and Afghanis who have died based on false premises, disproportionate does not even begin to explain this horrid hypocrisy and injustice. In the fall of 2008, I served as a captain and first mate with the Free Gaza Movement, a direct action in which 46 people successfully challenged the Israeli siege of Gaza.
Ralph, in February 2009, he founded Aloha Palestine, which is a company which plans to purchase a ferry that would carry hundreds of passengers at a time between Cyprus and Gaza. Incidentally, his business partner is Lauren Booth, Tony Blair's sister-in-law. There is a website for Aloha Palestine. You can see it is meant to be a passenger ferry, basically, between Cyprus and Gaza, and that is what he would like to negotiate in his visits in Gaza. Now, by the way, when he was taken hostage by the Israeli Defense Forces, there are on the internet photos of how he was beaten while in custody. And since then, the Israeli Defense Forces have identified him as an, quote, active terror operative, as a radical anti-Israel activist and an operative of the Hamas terror organization.
Well, Maya, I think it's worthwhile to read what he said in response to the claims by the Israeli military and authorities that he is an operative of Hamas and training terrorists in Gaza. In response to the Israeli government's claim that I am an operative of Hamas who trains terrorists in Gaza, I make the countercharge. Israel and the United States, along with their British partners, are the greatest terrorists of our time, selling, distributing, and using more weapons of mass destruction than all of the nations combined. When I speak of terrorism, I use the Black's Law Dictionary definition of the word. With that definition, it is clear. The United States is the number one terrorist of the 20th and 21st centuries. There are over 800,000 innocent children in Gaza that are among the victims of Israel's terrorism. In fact, the entire population of Palestine is a victim of said terrorism. I do not say this as insightful rhetoric. I say it as a moral, thinking human being capable of seeing the truth. Despite the threats and slanderous charges, I will not repeat the sickening pattern of rejecting the legitimate right of self-defense. I wholeheartedly support that right. As for the charges against me, the truth lies within my actions in life. My path in life is an open book, and one that I am blessed and proud to have walked.
Ralph, the results of the Israeli Defense Force false statements against these five activists will be serious, as Ken O'Keefe's wife stated in an open letter. Ken O'Keefe and the four other individuals identified as terror operatives, including two Turkish citizens and a resident of France. These five individuals are now marked as targets for future assassination attempts by the Mossad. Note this, by calling these people terrorists, they are marking them for assassination. So this is not just verbiage from the IDF. The disinformation campaign by the Israeli security forces is not verbiage. There are serious consequences. And this leads us to some of the secret orders that are now been disclosed for the United States as well. And this is the revelation belatedly by the New York Times that there are secret orders to prepare new U.S. wars in the Middle East and Central Asia. These secret orders include covert ops, that is the benign way of talking about assassination, not just intelligence gathering, clandestine operations, which include targeted assassinations. It was a front page article in the New York Times, and as I mentioned, the New York Times revealed that it had delayed revealing this and also that it had kept out some of the details at the behest of the Department of Defense in the United States. But this is a secret directive that had been signed by General David Petraeus, the chief of the U.S. Central Command, and it orders the expansion of covert military operations throughout the Middle East, Central Asia, and the Horn of Africa. It's a seven-page document entitled Joint Unconventional Warfare Task Force Execute Order, and it essentially provides the U.S. military with a blank check to carry out aggressive acts against virtually any country. It was issued in September 2009. 2009, and the order calls for the creation of a network of covert task forces and intelligence gathering units which will, quote, penetrate, defeat, or destroy, end quote, any target within any country designated by the U.S. military. The forces will carry out clandestine operations which, quote, cannot or will not be accomplished, end quote, through other military means. It's going to, quote, prepare the environment for full-scale military assault. Ralph?
Mark Mazzetti in the New York Times. The top American command in the Middle East has ordered a broad expansion of clandestine military activity in Iran, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, and other countries in the region. The secret directive signed by General David Petraeus authorizes American special operations troops to be sent to both friendly and hostile nations throughout the Middle East, Central Asia, and the Horn of Africa to build ties with local forces and to pave the way for military strikes in Iran if tensions over its nuclear ambitions escalate, Mark Mazzetti continues in the New York Times. While the Bush administration approved some clandestine military activities far from designated war zones, the new order under Barack Obama is intended to make such efforts more systematic and long-term, officials said. Its goals are to build networks that will penetrate, disrupt, defeat, and destroy Al-Qaeda and all militant groups, and to prepare the environment for future attacks by American and local military forces. In broadening its secret activity, the New York Times continues, the United States military has sought to break its dependence on the Central Intelligence Agency and other spy agencies for information in countries without a significant American troop presence. The order is meant for teams of American troops to fill intelligence gaps about terror organizations, especially emerging groups plotting attacks in the United States. Some Pentagon officials worry that the expanded role carries risks. The authorized activity will strain relations with governments like those in Saudi Arabia and Yemen. Many in the military are concerned that as American troops assume these roles far from traditional combat, they will be at risk of being treated as spies. This seven-page directive authorized specific operations in Iran, and it includes assassination and war plans to be prepared in advance in the event that President Obama authorizes a strike. Now, this is a detailed article which is amplified by the Washington Post, and it places in context, brothers and sisters, these deliberate executions that are unfolding against the humanitarian efforts to break the siege of Gaza. U.S. secret war expands globally as special operations forces take larger role, Karen DeYoung on June 4th in the Washington Post. Beneath its commitment to soft-spoken diplomacy and beyond the combat zones of Afghanistan and Iraq, the Obama administration is significantly expanding a largely secret war against radical groups, according to senior military and administration officials. Special operation forces have grown in number and budget and are deployed in 75 countries, compared with 60 at the beginning of last year. In addition, units that have spent years in the Philippines and Colombia and teams are operating in Yemen and elsewhere are being expanded into the Middle East, Africa, and Central Asia. Commanders are developing plans for increasing use of such forces. In Somalia, a special operations raid last year killed various people alleged to be associated with Al-Qaeda throughout East Africa. The surge in special operations deployments, along with intensified CIA drone attacks in western Pakistan, is the other side of the National Security Document of Global Engagement. An advantage of using secret forces for these missions that is rarely discussed is that Democratic presidents, such as Obama, criticized from either side of the political spectrum, is now undertaking a vastly expanded operation in countries across the world. Brothers and sisters, the context is clear. Secret order prepares new wars in the Middle East and Central Asia. The article in the World Socialist website spells out what we are discussing here. This is indeed the context for this escalation, this attack, this execution of the humanitarian effort to break the siege and starving out of the people of Gaza, the Warsaw ghettoization of the population of Palestine in Gaza and in the West Bank, brothers and sisters, assimilated to preparations now of a major new escalation of war in Lebanon, against Syria, against Iran, against the peoples of the world.
Ralph, the importance of the continuation of the Gaza flotilla must be repeated again and again. As soon as the Mavi Marmara and the other ships were stopped by the Zionist forces, the Rachel Corrie had taken off, a ship that started in Ireland that's named after Rachel Corrie, the International Solidarity Movement activist who was assassinated essentially by the Israeli bulldozer as she tried to block the tearing down of a home in Gaza. 5 days after the assault on the six-boat flotilla, the Rachel Corrie was stopped in international waters about 20 miles from the coast of Gaza. At first, the Irish government supported the Rachel Corrie, and it did support the delivery of the humanitarian assistance that was aboard the boat, but it conceded to the Zionists that the boat could be brought into Israel and offloaded, and it accepted the Zionists' contention that it would deliver the aid, the 1,200-ton Rachel Corrie's aid, to the people of Gaza. There is no guarantee that that aid will get to Gaza. The boat was taken to Ashdod. There were 11 passengers, including the Nobel Peace Laureate, Mairead Corrigan from the Irish struggle, and the former Assistant Deputy Secretary General Dennis Halliday, who had been a special UN envoy to Iraq and had resigned because of what he saw going on in Iraq. Great Britain announced that it's going to increase its aid to the Gaza refugees to £19 million. This aid will go to UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency. 70% of Gazans rely upon the aid coming from outside Gaza. 70%. This is not the end with this flotilla. A new flotilla is being gathered, and we have news that the Iran Red Crescent Society is going to try to break the Israeli blockade by sending food and medical supplies. Red Crescent official Abdul Ruf Abidzadeh said that one shipment of relief goods will arrive in Gaza via Egypt by the end of the week. But more so, two relief ships will be sent to the coast of Gaza to break the blockade. One will include a hospital ship with doctors, nurses, and operating rooms, and another vessel with more relief goods like food and medicine. Whether they will be attacked by the Zionists as Iranian ships is to be seen, but they will not just be these Iranian ships. A foreign spokesman from Iran said that the Iranian ships will be part of a new aid flotilla organized by several Islamic countries. As well, in Europe, some Palestinian European Jewish groups announced yesterday that they are preparing ships to also join the flotillas. This is European Jews for Just Peace in the Near East and Jews for Justice for Palestinians. Ralph.
The Swedish trade union movement has called for a boycott of Israeli shipping and has called upon its longshore and other trade unions not to load Israeli ships. The South African trade unions have made a similar call. The Palestinian trade union movement has issued an appeal for trade unionists across the world to boycott the Israeli ships associated with the assault upon the people of Palestine and the people of Gaza. As I speak, the ILWU Local 10 is preparing a resolution for similar action by the longshore of the West Coast, and the San Francisco Labor Council is preparing a resolution of endorsement of these calls on the part of trade unionists across the world to boycott Israeli shipping and Israeli goods and to refuse to load them. As I speak, brothers and sisters, the Israeli commando who killed six aid workers is to receive a medal. As the autopsies come out revealing details about the execution of the victims, the staff sergeant who takes responsibility for personally executing six aid workers is to receive a medal. The Israeli military is going to reward him. The staff sergeant's story is being promoted throughout Israel in a jingoist craze. He is praised for stabilizing the situation and is being prepared to receive a Medal of Valor. Meanwhile, the IDF has had to admit it doctored the flotilla's audio clips. They faked the video. They faked the audio. And in the Israeli Knesset, the Knesset House Committee voted by a 7-1 majority to revoke the parliamentary rights of member of the Knesset Hanin Zoabi in the wake of her participation in the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. The committee decision is amplified by demands that she be brought to account as a terrorist and for her party, the National Democratic Assembly, to be outlawed. In addition to that, as we've mentioned, there is an organized campaign on Facebook and throughout Israel to summon people to prepare for the assassination of the member of the Knesset, Hanin Zoabi.
Ralph, I think we need to point out the change in the consciousness of people about the Zionist state and the fact that most of the boycott efforts, the statements that are coming out, describe Israel as an apartheid state. And not just an occupation, but that the Zionist state itself is an apartheid state and that it is a boycott of the Zionist state, just as there was a boycott of the South African apartheid state. And this boycott to date, the call for the boycott, includes trade unions such as the South African Congress of Trade Unions, COSATU, the National Union of Mine Workers in South Africa, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, the Maritime Union of Australia, the New Zealand Council of Trade Unions, International Dock Workers Council, the Confederation of Revolutionary Workers Union in Turkey, the Greek TUC, the Trade Union Central Council, the Greek Public Sector Union Federation, that's the ADEDY, the Trade Union International Workers in the Building, Wood, Building Materials and Allied Industries, the International Federation of Journalists, the World Federation of Trade Unions, the WFTU, the International Trade Union Confederation, the International Transport Workers Federation, the Public Services International, UNITE in UK, one of the major federations worldwide, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, the Education International, and here in the United States, the anti-war group U.S. Labor Against the War. This is a growing movement. So we have trade union congresses, not just individual union, but the federations of South Africa, Ireland, Scotland, the United Kingdom, as well as labor bodies in Australia, France, Canada, and Norway, Italy, and Catalonia. We have now growing here in the United States a move for the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement, that's the BDS campaign, against, and I note this, it is against apartheid Israel.
Because, brothers and sisters, we are the world. Working people, oppressed people, occupied people, exploited people, people who are mobilizing in Turkey to the point where the Turkish prime minister, whose government has had a military alliance with Israel and who is a supplier of Iranian oil through Turkey to Israel, is now threatening to go on a ship himself on the next flotilla backed by the Turkish Navy. That is a reflection of the vast radicalization of his people. That is the context, brothers and sisters, of this increased, escalated war of oppression on the part of the Obama regime and its murder apparatus, the Zionist state. That is the gravamen of this worldwide mobilization in defense of the Palestinian people for the removal of the Zionist state, for its discarding into the dustbin of history along with the apartheid state of South Africa, brothers and sisters. This struggle affects every one of us where we live. It affects us in every corner of the planet. Let us be part of it. Let's move forward, brothers and sisters. The struggle continues.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Israeli Massacre at Sea, Prelude to a Larger War. We'll be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. You can reach us at our new email address, takingaim@wbai.org.
Tatam ta chinda paro, tatam ta. Silon bakmi wala gamay.